But before we talk about specifics, I thought it'd be just kind of helpful to go through what the housing element is and what its contents are. So the housing element is an overview of the current housing market in the county. It provides a snapshot of what that housing is, the types of housing that are here, the kinds that are available. The goals from 08 were set in place as to what it could be, and the different initiatives and programs that are in place to support it. So I'm going to go through just the goals, objectives, and strategies. Hope you all had a chance to read through that element to get a sense of what is included. To begin, just a quick snapshot there. Total housing units in the county, there are percentage of total occupied versus vacant units. As you can see, the owner-occupied versus renter-occupied. The renter-occupied, there's a lot of discussion last week as to where that renter-occupied housing, and I think we talked about in the East, is being utilized by a lot of seasonal folks, and the number of people who are visiting and using those homes when they're here, and the number of what that would mean for population. And then we also have the vacant units, whether it's off-season housing or those that are not occupied because of either up for rent or for sale or maybe not habitable. So most of the housing units in the county, over 60%, are single-family detached. If you drive around, you can see that existing developments and new developments that are going in kind of follow the same themes. And it's since been like this for a while. Since 1980 or later, most of the housing units were built following that same model. The median home prices in the county are actually somewhat high. The average price is $295,000. And that was from the first quarter of this year, so that number is pretty recent. We have to talk about housing when we talk about income as well. And so when we talk about that housing price at $295,000, for comparison, median home price in Kent was almost $100,000 less. We can look at the seasonal communities along the shore and some other areas as being one of the drivers of that different median home price. However, the median family income in Sussex is less than $70,000, and that affordable worker who makes the 50%, and we heard a little bit about that today, of the area median income, AMI, is $110,000. So there is an affordability gap in terms of the average price of a home and the average household income as to what a person can afford. And I'm hoping today that we can talk about housing options and housing choices as part of today's discussion to make sure that if there's a person who is looking for a starter home or is in transition, that there is an opportunity to find a home that can afford near where they work and live and play.
Did you ever look at, if you pulled out the coastal area and then looked at the housing market to find these prices, affordability gaps, and average income, average price of homes at $300,000, if you take out the beach, mm-hmm. we're going to be similar to Kent County. The beach is unique. It's a different thing. But to add that in, I think it gives us an illusion that we got a real problem here, where maybe from say 113 West, we don't have that much of a problem.
That's a good point. And so we need to talk about if the affordable housing that might be available more to the western side of the county is near where places where people are working. If the jobs that they have are on the east side and they can't afford to live in that area and they have to commute, is that tenable? Is that something that we should be thinking about in terms of where this type of housing is located?
So to that point, do you have it down by geography?
We can. Not in the plan, no. I mean, the plan talks about this in terms of what the median home price is versus the median income and the discrepancy there, which... Because of the way that the county geographically is situated, the eastern side is more of a driving force, but it also is where the employment centers are.
Right. Unfortunately, I mean, I know in the real estate world, I mean, it's in the MLS, the local MLS, it's, you know, it is all based on geography, east mm-hmm. of Route 1 and Route 113 to Route 1 and. You know, and then Route 13. So, I mean, it is based on the geography in the local MLS as you're doing searches for properties. So I'm just wondering, does it make sense to I don't know. I'm just wondering, does it make sense to have a map of the geography so we know where the numbers are being driven, to George's point?
I would map that with local incomes then too, and local
sure.
jobs and local
Absolutely.
Infrastructure. What all of that would have to be put into context.
Can we or should we? I mean, I don't know.
Well,
in the comp plan, I don't know if that's a place, the inappropriate place for it.
I think it should, because I've always said when it comes to Sussex County, you know, all these rules that, you know, smart growth, all this stuff, throw the book away, because we live in a resort and the dynamics of a resort are so much different in a coastal area like we have, in the high rents and the high prices. It's just not typical. It's not even typical of most other resorts.
Because look in your book, George.
Well,
three on housing, you'll find it.
Okay.
What it says here about Eastern Sussex County is valued at more than $300,000.
Okay. I know. I'm just saying, but should the plan...
It's already been put in our book.
Okay. But should the plan, like I guess Rob was alluding to, break down some more regional type of statistics?
The plan can, but the goal for this is it's a comprehensive plan.
Okay.
It's a goal to look at the county. And I think we can consider maybe identifying areas that might benefit from maybe a more close scrutiny as to how that area is developing and what jobs and opportunities are there through some smaller master planning process. But the comprehensive plan is a comprehensive plan.
Right. I'm just thinking, if it's going to be a tool for economic development and other things, and when people start looking, you know, let me look at Sussex County and go, oh, that's too expensive,
mm-hmm.
is the initial response, or the other statistics, just because it's been driven up so high from the coastal area.
But so
I didn't know if that's just misleading and may not be helpful.
Okay.
Thought.
And I would add into that, I mean, if it's mapped, I mean, not that you're segmenting, you know, I mean, the free market determines where people choose to live, right, based on the economics and price points and incomes. We also know what's driving those numbers is the retirees, the secondary home market. It's not the local families that are trying to raise their own families and trying to make a buck here in the county. I think we all know that. And so, to me, I and to the affordable housing piece, if we're trying to shorten that gap, you know, if it's mapped, it would also help DelDOT and transportation guys, because I think it's an element that ties to each other as it relates to public transportation. So I'm just wondering if it would be a benefit if we were to do it that way, or add a map to the equation.
Well, we could probably pull up a map of housing prices using any kind of home buyer tool that's available online. But to the first point you're making about the free market determining, you know, what home prices are, that is based on housing availability. So, I mean, if you have different options within different areas that are at different price points, that would then drive what types of people are able to live and work in an area that would be specific to an area of the county.
Well, availability, we also know that, you know, per Mr. Shell, the testimony and other builders that we've spoken to, I mean, they're going to build what sells, right? So it's a catch-22. I mean, there's real needs for other options that versus what the builders are being. So they're going to go where they can make a dollar, which we get. That's free market. But at the same time, if we can get a little bit more organized and plan, this is a comp plan for affordable housing and i.e. public transportation, in areas whereas the jobs are, I think they all work together. They all work together, I think, for the same effort. So this is a plan, i.e. we need a plan versus just rolling with it. I think it would make sense if we can plan accordingly for all three of those elements, the public housing, the affordable housing, and the employment, economic development. Those three elements are critical to our local families, mostly more versus those that are coming here to live their dream in their retirement days. And we appreciate them, but they're coming with money. They're not making it here. So, you know, I think we need to place a focus on those that are here and trying to augment and support and provide those needs in addition to.
Okay.
Can you just explain that affordability gap number? So it's the medium income price minus the 110, which is... Put that in a different word for me. I don't understand that.
So, okay, let's dive into this. A median home price is established based on the average cost of a home.
$295,000.
Correct. And then there's an average family income,
okay.
which is in this county.
$65,900.
Right. So a worker who makes 50% of that, what that number would be, which is the 110, 50% of that is at 65.9, that drives your affordability gap. So you have to,
earlier, about half of 65.9, right?
But that's the,
it's a half of 110.
That's the affordable mortgage.
Okay.
The one that's making 50%.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. I got it.
So the comment earlier today was maybe raising that threshold from 50% up to 80.
Right.
And that would allow you maybe a little more flexibility in terms of what housing opportunities are available to you.
Because that would close the gap.
Correct.
Of the affordable. If, so you're using the 50% of the medium income. That's making the gap higher.
Correct.
So by changing the 50% number, you lower the gap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there was actually a goal proposed, or an objective proposed, in the, during the Planning and Zoning Commission phase that specifically indicated that that number be set at the 80%. That is not in the current plan, but it's something that we can discuss.
And that number doesn't matter whether you're owning or renting.
Well, rental is a little bit different. Isn't the rental less than?
So actually on page 5 of the plan, it shows that the highest demand is under the 50% AMI. And so I understand the distinguishing pieces about the east and the west side, but we still have a lot of folks that are wage earners that are providing for all of these retirees that would like to live near where they work.
Sure.
On the east side. A lot of restaurants.
Sure.
And service.
I'd like
industry.
To live in. I'd like to live in Henlopen Acres.
Well, I'm not saying that, but they, you know, instead of driving from Seaford to, from, you know, instead of driving from Seaford to get to their job in Lewis, they would like to live relatively close. So I think this is just, it's hard to just remove the resort area when we still need people to work in that area and want to live.
But yeah, but it's, it messes up all the numbers. I think
that's a good indicator of why we need more affordable housing in that area, because people can't live there.
So let me ask you this. So dig a little deeper to IG's point and then George's. So the median home price, and again, we're talking about housing, right? For the local families, not
right
overall housing. This is the subject. So do we know what it is for the non-secondary homes? Can we break that number down? Is that something? I think we've got the stat in here. I know I've read it. I think it was. Well, I guess it's on page 1, right? So
I thought median price just is.
We got a percent of the houses, so we know who's living in them. So do we have the ability to figure out what the values of those houses that they're living in?
I don't believe so, because that comes from either the U.S. Census Bureau or the American Community Survey, and they don't break it down. It is a holistic county approach. Depending on the town size, and I don't think we have any that meet the population qualifications, could they even get that for the town in Sussex County?
Well, don't the census does break everything down into a little system. I mean, they...
I think we have somebody from the state, from housing, who might be able to help answer some of this question.
All right.
So as she's walking up, so that's question one. Question two is the median, because this is all kind of brought up, Mike, if you recall, at the Today and Tomorrow conference in one of the breakout sessions. And the family incomes in Sussex, is that all full-time residents, i.e. to include the retirees, or is that just the working families, i.e. their wages, they're earning wages and not retirees?
When you become a retiree and move here, you are a resident.
I understand that, but that says...
Well, let's let her answer it.
Because I think that was a discussion at the Today and Tomorrow conference is... I think specifically by Joe Conaway, if I'm not mistaken.
You understand his question?
Sure. Yes. I'm Karen Horton from Delaware State Housing Authority. First, I apologize for wearing my prescription sunglasses. I can't find my regular prescription.
So we love
that's
it.
Fine. That's fine.
You're at the beach. So, it's all good.
That's, yes.
Perfect. There you go.
The median family income, the way to think of it is that, you know, out of 100 households, it's the 50th household.
Sure.
And that's what their income is going to be. So it's really comparable to the median price, is that you think about those that are earning that higher end price and that earn that higher income, they're going to be kind of taken away because they skew. You know, like the higher income, the higher priced homes, they skew the numbers, but that's why we look at the median price. Because when you look at that 50th person, they're paying that $295,000 on average for the house. So if that's a way to look at, because I know, Councilman Cole, that you were interested in how can we break it apart for the different areas, and really the way that perhaps to think about it is that on this spectrum of the median 1 through 100, if the median 50th one is, you know, can only afford $110,000 house, you know, but the median price out there is $295,000. It is comparing apples to apples, and that's what I was trying to stress, if that's making sense.
I still think the coastal areas messes up the numbers. I'm not sophisticated enough and mess with this enough to understand, other than if you just eliminated that, I think you'd have a better picture of what the real incomes and housing market is in Sussex County by taking out that Lewis down to Fenwick back so far.
Like Councilman Arlett and the others who have spoken today, is that really the issue is just lack of housing options and supply to help.
But we're building houses, we're just not building them for
right. We're not building the affordable ones for all the workforce that are working in, you know, those tourist industry jobs. And so, I mean, we can split it, and I mean, we can take a lot of time to try to split it. I don't know if it can be split like that because it is based on the census data, and they don't do the census as in detail as they used to do it. But I think at the end of the day, you're still looking at this tremendous gap. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks out there who have lived, who have been born and raised in this county, and who are aging in this county, and we're seeing them, you know, that are in tremendous need for safe and affordable housing and close to where they work. And so really it's an issue of how can we increase that supply, and how can we leverage all these resources that Amy talked about, you know, that helps make everything come together to meet, so we can meet their need. And so
most of the jurisdictions, ma'am, I've as I read about the topic, the voluntary type of approach we've taken here in Sussex County versus the mandatory approach I've seen in other jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. I believe the only way to make it work is the mandatory, because in coastal Sussex County, with the land as valuable as it is and the prices you can get because of the market, why would anybody go through all the hassle to do this? And they're not. That's why they're not doing it. It's all about the money and the return on their investments. And unless it's subsidized or the state or something like that, or it's mandatory. So if we made every development Mr. Shell built, if he put 100 units in it, 30% had to be this. That way we would build a housing stock. But until we do something like that, like you said, there's developers just don't want to mess with these programs. They don't understand them, or again, the money's too good to go with just with the market forces and forget about workforce housing and affordable housing. It all sounds good, but in certain parts of the country, I don't think, like I said, I'd like to live in Henlopen Acres. I'd like to work in Henlopen Acres. I'd like to be able to walk to work.
In yard care? Well, do yard care.
I'd like to have somebody pick me up every day. I mean, there's all kinds of things I'd like, but the reality of it is, in coastal Sussex County, it's terribly expensive, and the rents are very high, whether they're seasonal or year-round rental. And that's just the nature of the animal.
I can say personally, I have no interest in living in Henlopen Acres because of it's flooding and everything.
There are nice people there, too.
But the thing is, I think most people who are working in that side of the county, they're just looking for an affordable place to live so they don't have to commute so far. I thought you made an excellent point, you know, about the mandatory. I think that probably is a very effective tool that the county can consider to really make that a reality as part of the toolbox. You know, that there are so many resources. There's the LIHTC programs, the Housing Development Fund, you know, but if what is really critical is the county, and I think that it was really brought very well by Mr. Schell, is that by the county proactively identifying these areas in that yellow area, that area of opportunity. And it doesn't have to be in a Henlopen Acres, just somewhere on Route 1. You know what I mean? Or close to Route 1, which is also a natural place for those buses.
But if we identify it, then we have to force the person who purchased that property to do some development, to do it our way, the way we want it done. It's government basically dictating it. It can be in all these colors all you want, but they got to voluntarily buy it and build what you want. And that's it just doesn't happen. It hasn't happened, I don't see, out there, unless it's, again, a mandatory type program.
I think if the county wants to pursue mandatory, I think that would probably be very welcome.
But like a manufactured housing park is typically, you would think, affordable housing, unless it's at the beach, you know, or as on a canal or on this. We have some very expensive manufactured housing parks to live in versus Laurel, Delaware, or one over in Seaford.
And there are a lot of resources that can be brought to bear to help make sure that those units stay affordable.
Yeah, rent control, we don't like that either.
But if you're wanting to make it affordable to address the need of affordable housing and for the folks who are working here, I think that that's, you know, nobody's saying apply rent control across the board for all housing. But for folks, when you're trying to meet that need for people, again, who have been born, raised, lived, gone to school, come back, and have committed themselves as county, I think sometimes you may need to look at those types of resources and tools to help make that connection better. And it's just two things. One, identifying those areas proactively where are most appropriate for affordable housing in terms of infrastructure, services, transit, and proactively zoning and planning form, and designing them and set up the regulations so that they are the way the county wants them. And then figuring out what kind of resources need to be brought to bear, whether it is some type of lease, you know, some type of deed restriction, whether it's through LIHTC, whether it's through, you know, Mr. Schell participating and through, you know, SCRP or the MPDU program. You know, there's a lot of different ways to then approach that. But I think the biggest thing is to have that proactive identification of where those sites are most reasonable for the folks that work in Sussex County.
Last thing I think Mr. Schell wants is us to help him design anything. So that's why I say I don't know how we connect what you like and what it sounds good, and it, you know, maybe makes sense in a book, but when you got into reality, it doesn't. The marketplace doesn't go with that. I can't identify something on a map as a government official and have the market respond to it. I know down around Ocean View, we thought that near the bay, you know, on that side of 26 was going to be the most popular. All of a sudden, south of Ocean View popped like crazy. And you know, we could have painted all kinds of colors, but it's more market-driven. And again, I think a lot of this stuff, no offense, sounds good. I never did like smart growth because it was just political correctness in a textbook or something. It just didn't work in reality. But so I don't know, unless we do something mandatory, and I don't know if we're willing to do that. And even when it comes to rent control, rental houses, if we mandatorily told this developer, okay, 30% is going to have to be at this level, you know, and stuff like that. So there's issues with that. And I think here in Sussex County, historically, we don't want to plan that much. We don't want to get in his business. We don't want to tell him as much. Here's the land. Here's the rules. Follow them. And that's kind of been our approach, I think, in Sussex County more so than.
I think with the affordable housing, that the needs are so great and so varied that really, you know, 50 years ago, the two-parent family was 50% of all households. Nowadays, it's the smallest segment. So, I mean, you have a wide range of different types of households, and they have different types of needs. And I think part of it, the biggest thing, is increasing a variety of housing options. That's one big thing. And also just having that along those, again, corridors where there are services and transits. And I think that, again, by planning for it up front, you know, that you would have more control of how it's designed, how it's shaped, how it fits into the county's framework. And I bet you if you did that, it would immediately, one, it would help if it was by right, it would help with all the affordable housing providers, help to not have to go through those very painful rezonings, which, you know, as Mr. Schell said, the people, you know, come out with pitchforks and tar and, you know, are going to come up with all sorts of wild, you know, reasons to deny it, when really I feel like the need is so huge now. You know, that you have people, families who are, you know, trying to send their kids to school without, you know, changing their school district, who are sleeping in cars. We have an increase in the homeless population. And that's kind of what happens when there's a lack of affordable housing and housing options. And it's a real issue. And I'm really hopeful that the county just looks at it collectively, looks at all the resources, the partners in the room that want to work, you know, are really looking forward to the opportunity to work with the county. You know, it's not a one fix all. It's going to take a lot of different things. And just that we're here to help and help to be a partner. And it's not going to be just one thing.
Can you provide the example? You're saying the word, the term, housing types.
Right.
So could you be descriptive? What do you mean exactly by that?
Sure. For example, anything from attached townhouses, multifamily duplexes. You can also design houses, for example, that look like a mansion, that look like a single-family detached, but they can actually be a fourplex. You can also make changes. The goal is to create a variety of housing opportunities. And so one of the things, to me, it's such low-hanging fruit, and it's been mentioned many times in different presentations, is the accessory dwelling unit. You know, so much of your population is aging. You also are experiencing the multi-generational household, where the kids are coming back, the boomerang kids are coming back to the house, but the families are living on top of each other and they're ready to kill each other. You know, so it's like by having the accessory dwelling unit, whether it's in the house or whether it's attached to it in a garage, you know, that one, it helps that person, that elderly person who's trying to age in place, be able to, that's house rich, cash poor, to be able to give space in their house to a millennial who might not be ready to settle into a single family detached. Also, if they have a boomerang child, gives them a little bit of separation, but it also provides income for that house rich, cash poor person. You know, like the numbers were just mentioned a while ago, what Social Security is, you know, people can't survive on it. And so that's one way to help increase the different types of housing opportunities. There's just a variety of that different type of housing. And it can be shaped different ways. It's just, you know, it's approach of how to revisit the zoning ordinance and the subdivision codes to let it happen.
So I just an observation, and George, you're not going to want to hear this, I know. But
I know more density. I know it, more density.
Well, but listen to her. I mean, truth of the matter is, I mean, so in the real world, higher density typically does mean more cars, more transportation. And if it's at the beaches, it's catering to those needs, our vacationers and our secondary homeowners. We all know that. George, listen.
No, I know. I've heard this for 30 years.
And we still have a big problem today of our affordable housing. So we need to do something different.
Unbelievable.
So to your point, if there is more various housing types, to your point, and the reality is, yes, it does create more density, to your point. The question that I would have, which gets back to your point, mandating, and I'm not a mandating guy, but if we have more housing types, i.e., higher densities towards the coast areas around public transportation for our local residents, can we legally do that? Can we mandate this is for, and I don't know the answer, I'm asking, can we legally say this community, these houses are for those who work here, live and work here, and not for our vacationers?
What's that word mandate mean?
So I haven't researched that specifically. I mean, I know that from talking to Brandy and Brad, and when we looked at fair housing, other jurisdictions do that, but it has to be across the board. You can't, I don't think it would pass muster if you start pinpointing properties or areas or things like that that, you know, have to have mandatory. affordable housing. It would have to be everything in the county or everything in a particular zone or whatever, zoning district.
Everything over a certain number of units, possibly anything. There has to be.
I don't know how we would do it. Yeah. But and then, Mr. Shell there, I mean, again, from the private sector, is it something that you do provide incentives or however you can attract the locals, families, right, into these housing types that you might build versus catering to those who just want a cheap secondary home?
I think there is a legal means of doing that.
I would love to hear from your perspective on the private sector side. Tell me about that.
I mean, I think the way it's set up now, and to encourage affordable housing, the private developer has to facilitate the approval process and the review process of an application and designate kind of who qualifies for one of their affordable units. But then it's actually monitored by either a state or, what am I looking for here?
Somebody's got to monitor.
Yeah, there's an annual monitoring process, but right now in that application it does say something along the lines of you have to have been working in the county for at least a year to basically submit and apply. It's done in a similar way that it's legal for me to tell someone they have to be 55 years or older. Once I have 20% of my population that's under 55, I can legally tell a 44-year-old they cannot live in that development. So there are legal means by which that qualify in fair housing kind of laws to do these types of things. But one thing I want to say to George, if you know, I think there's a step in between mandating these types of affordable housing and what we have now, which is something that'll never really happen.
I agree.
Right now, we don't have any high density zoning. If you guys said within the areas of opportunity, I'm only using that because it actually is a designated area that already exists, and it's easier to piggyback off of something that exists than creating our own. If a developer comes in and asks for a density in excess of 4 units per acre, they have to be in the program. So you're not essentially telling every property owner and every developer, I don't care what you do, you have to be in the program. You're saying, look, if you come and you ask us for something, which naturally I'm going to have to do because you don't have any HR zone land out there. It's gone. It's done. So there's virtually no land that I can find that's of a decent size. You might find it half acre here or an acre and a half there that is zoned for something more than 4 units per acre anyway. So guys like me, if I'm going to do rental apartments, you don't do rental apartments on 4 units per acre. You'd have like 98% open space. It doesn't make sense. I need to come in and ask for an HR rezoning. If you guys said something along the lines of, if you're in an area of opportunity, we look favorably upon it. We still need to look at sewer capacity and other things. We can't do a by right blanket approval. But we can say we look favorably upon applications within the area of opportunity up to 12 units per acre. If you participate, and you can say this, if we go above 4 units per acre, you have to be in the program, period. Like, there's no opportunity to not be in the program, or don't show up and ask for it because our zoning code now says we only go to that density if you're providing affordable units. That's a middle ground that I could see possibly working.
The only dilemma right now is, and I'll just make it real quick, is when we had all that smart growth stuff, it was like, you know, put your housing and all this stuff, you know, on your infrastructure and everything. Our infrastructure is broken in Sussex County because of the relationships we have with the state and the roads and the highways and all this other stuff. So the first time you want to put in a high density property, we just saw one a week or so ago, and the neighbors all scream. When you develop HOAs, the HOAs, they're restricted against, you know, they got problems. You got deed restrictions in a lot of these areas. And so then there's wastewater issues. But the infrastructure, basically, the people, you know, we can ill afford. DelDOT's going to come down and say, you know, if you want to go 12 units to the acre in this, and it's surrounded by MR zoning, everybody's going to scream. We're going to get beat on so bad. And because of the traffic issue, we hear that on throughout the county now. So until we had a better highway system to move these people,
we'll never get there.
We're not going. I'm not willing to approve high density zoning in areas that have serious problems with nothing out there to tell me there's going to be a
true. But let me walk you through a scenario that I think addresses your point somewhat. Let's say a new restaurant opens in the eastern part of the county,
mm-hmm.
and let's say that restaurant needs 30 employees mm-hmm. At its peak time. Those employees are going to live somewhere within 40 miles. They need to live somewhere. They can't live in New Jersey or down in Maryland. So if you're supporting low density, even in growth zones and zones in the eastern part of the county, those people are just on the roads longer. You haven't prevented traffic. You've encouraged traffic. Because had you actually approved a project at, say, 12 units per acre within 3 miles, and it had an affordable component, so that, and actually, quite frankly, if you don't mind a roommate, you can live in our market rate rental apartments and work at a restaurant in Eastern Sussex County and make the numbers work. But so now those people, if you had one of these high density projects, could easily commute to that restaurant. By saying no, we want low density in Eastern Sussex County, you're pushing them west.
Right.
You're just putting more traffic out there.
I still don't. But it sounds
so good. You've been the problem, George.
I've been the problem all these years. I've been the problem because I just think it sounds great.
So you want me to sit down now?
I could go on forever. I know Michael started making faces at me, and I don't know. Okay. I don't want to.
No, we need to keep going just through the elements.
Yeah.
Or I might make Sam say something, and I don't want that to happen either.
But
pretty much.
It's invaluable. Comments.
He likes to talk.
Testimony.
So I'll let him go.
I like to listen and ask questions.
I think it's important at this point to make a note that we need to distinguish what we're talking about when we talk about housing options versus affordable housing. I think that the two gets mixed up together as one is the same as the other, and that's not necessarily the case. Housing options mean that you're providing different housing types at different price points. Right now, the county's been developing the same type of housing for many, many years.
We don't develop it. They develop it.
Approving.
Okay.
Developers have been building the same type of housing stock,
right.
Home buyers come here and they buy those homes. So is it the chicken or the egg thing? If they had a different type of housing stock, would homeowners, when they come here to buy a house, buy that house instead? And I guess, you know, we need to figure out what the market can bear, and the only way we can do that is to maybe consider different types of housing options being built in different areas of the county that would allow different types of home buyers to move and live where they work.
We don't prevent any type of housing opportunities, do we?
Maybe this mini house?
Yeah, that's the only one I can think of
that just showed up on the market. But other than that, we see developments with mix of duplexes, of row homes, of single family, sometimes in the same project. But the only way to make it work for affordable housing is mandatory that so much has got to be set aside. So it's the only way it works.
Well, for affordable housing, yes. But in terms of housing options,
we got it. I mean, except for mini houses, we got manufactured.
I think the goal and in the responsibility for county officials would be to identify the type of community that you want to develop and then work toward that, and that's what this plan is supposed to set up for you. So if you would like to have fewer trips for people that are leaving homes to go to work, to go to school, to go to the grocery store, whatever that is, because of the design of that community, this is the opportunity to do that.
Right. Well, one of the things I'm against is rent control, and the second thing I really believe is supply and demand. If there's no real supply there for it, no demand, why supply it? And that's a good way to shut down houses or anything else. If you can't make a profit, why do it?
That's American way.
I really believe in that. I believe if a farmer owns a piece of land, he wants to sell a piece of land, he already has the right to sell it.
Right.
Back to this government, and thanks to a lot of these people sit on this council in the past, since I've been here, has voted for More regulations. Believe me, every time you add a regulation, it adds another cost and more expense and more time taken up. There's a lot of time wasted trying to get a permit, time to get something done. We put out notices that we want people come here for businesses, and sometimes it takes them at least 2 years. All our famous words is defer. And defer, that's all we say, defer. If they want a permit, it's just defer. So I've said no. Thank you.
So I think the next thing we want to look at are some of the goals that were in the 2008 plan.
Just to bring everybody up to speed with the current plan, we did have goals, and we used a lot of that information to start developing goals for the new plan. The first one is, of course, you know, safe and decent housing for residents of the county, and this includes low and moderate income residents. Another other items from 2008, housing options for county workforce. This is where that AMI percentage came in, that 80% to 125%. The encouragement of manufactured homes, private for-profit developers to undertake affordable housing projects. This is all for those low-income residents. Decrease the substandard housing and preserve affordable housing stock. So that's a matter of identifying where those substandard housing units are and making sure that they are maintained. And then creating the moderate priced rental unit program, which I believe was done. So in 2018, we kind of built on that, saying that it is still about the provision of safe and decent housing for all residents. We want to, and this is where we get into those housing options, we're looking to ensure that there is a diversity of housing opportunities that are available to meet the needs of those residents of different ages, different incomes, different abilities. So for example, based on the type of jobs that are available in the county and in the different sectors, you may have someone who is looking to move here for a certain industry and their spouse or their partner is not able to find a job within their skill set because of a different professional need. You're then looking to have maybe one income support that housing purchase. So if you diversify job opportunities in the county at different income levels, you may have the opportunity for a two-household income, then determine the type of house that a family can afford. So these different things in terms of, you know, our ability to purchase types of housing here are all factors in that. Universal design is also something that's been talked about a lot, and that goes into the people's ability to move around within the home, whether because of age or disability. So those household configurations, and that all gets part and parcel to the resale of that property. I know that for retirees that are coming here and they're buying their dream house, it's a custom home that may be vacant in 20 years after they move out of there into a smaller dwelling unit. Is that house something that can go back on the market easily because it was a custom home for that one person and maybe the new home buyer would not be looking for that? So what is the long-term track record for the homes that are being built here now for that resale in the future? And then finally, affirmative further fair housing choices for the county. Other goals ensure the provision of safe and decent housing include housing quality condition without causing displacement. There are different programs that allow for county resources and local resources being used to upkeep a home that might be falling into disrepair before that home becomes unlivable. You can do that while the homeowner is still there. Encourage the reinvestment of existing housing stock through rehabilitation renovation as opposed to building new, and then reducing homelessness and displacement within the county. The second goal that we talk about is the diversity of housing opportunities, including increasing affordable and fair housing, work with private and public agencies to increase affordable rental and homeownership opportunities, and facilitating and promoting land use policies that enable an increase in the supply of affordable housing in areas with adequate infrastructure. So it gets to the point where some of these homes that are being considered, if you're doing it in an area that not only has adequate infrastructure, that could include, you know, sewer, water, electrical, but also proximity to local services, whether it's healthcare or food and education. All of those things are supposed to be in place to really support that community in a healthy way. Ensure diversity in housing opportunities. So we're talking about persons with disabilities and the aging. I touched on that with the universal design. Expanding those opportunities where folks have English as a second language and opportunities for new types of housing when compatible with surrounding land use and development. And the third goal, ensure the county's zoning and land use designations or decisions do not discriminate. So when you're looking at approvals of some of these applications, think about the kind of person that would potentially be living in this home from their age perspective, for their physical ability perspective, from their income perspective, to make sure that there may be options or opportunities for them to maybe look at that new development or that community as a place where they can live and can work based on the type of house that's being built.
John, let me go back two slides and just make a comment. It's kind of the chicken and the egg deal, right? It's you build the commercial, and the housing will come. You build the housing, and the commercial will come. So is the thought to plan them both simultaneously?
It depends on what type of development. So, for example, if you're looking at industrial uses, you wouldn't necessarily site those in a multifamily area, but some commercial and retail uses you can. So when you're looking at where people are going when they leave their house, that is the type of community design that you need to be thinking about, because those trips add burden to existing infrastructure. So if you're saying, if I approve a housing development in this area and the nearest grocery store, the nearest gas station, the nearest school, the nearest whatever is X miles down the road, is that the right place for that to go? Is there a better way to plan for that?
But I guess you don't know that, right? Because 9 years from now, the grocery store may be there, right? So you would want to plan for the grocery store at the same time you're planning for the housing.
Exactly. That's where those future land use designations play a strong role in terms of determining how your community takes shape.
Yeah, okay. That's why you got the crystal ball, right?
Yes.
Because we're driving everybody to Route 1, which is causing more problems on Route 1, right? But the housing growth is occurring away from Route 1.
Well, the housing growth is being approved in areas that are specific to housing, and then those people that would then need to make a trip to get to the areas where they would go to a restaurant, for example.
Okay, and then and what we're tasked to do to with this plan is to try and plan for changing that.
Exactly. I guess a good way to look at it is if I'm a landowner or a developer, I might be thinking very narrowly in terms of what the parcel looks like and how it would function with a certain type of development on it. I'm not necessarily thinking about what might be a mile or two down the road and what that would mean for traffic and travel. But you're seeing the bigger picture here. So you can look at both of those in context and say, is this the right approach for this type of development?
Okay. Good.
I would say some of that discussion gets more into also, which is the underlying theme of the whole plan to some extent, the future land use element. I mean, those types right. of discussions go into that, and that was a large part of what the commission talked about too. So,
Could I ask John? You've done a lot of plans. Can you point to a plan that has actually worked? Because I think all of this. I mean, we've been doing plans forever. Kent County's been doing them. Newcastle's been doing it. When the traffic gets bad, the traffic's bad. The public transportation up and down Coastal Highway doesn't do a thing to ease transportation. It just gives some people another opportunity to get into the traffic and get somewhere. But it doesn't ease anything. So all these things, I don't see us solving homelessness. I don't see us solving anything with a plan. I see us maybe easing it or whatever. But it sounds to me like the direction is we should be planning this development. We should be doing it. And that never works. I never really think that government, these five people here can sit here and dictate what the future is going to be like. Like he said, things change so much. So there's always going to be redevelopment. It's been, again, from every community I've ever been to. You go down. Florida is all the little towns have all now redeveloped and stuff, and they've come in with more green and more this and that and things, and they've improved things, but they still have the traffic, they still have these other things. But where are these plans? Where's a plan that has actually solved the homelessness problem or affordable housing? What? Tell us the best plan out there and what they do. I want to hear it.
I don't think
it exists.
You're expecting a lot from a comprehensive plan.
I know if you're
thinking it's going to solve homeless or...
The way we talk, it sounds like we are.
Well, no. What we're trying to talk about is looking at the way the county's been developing over the last 30 years right. and saying, do we want to continue that over the next 30, or can we do some things differently that maybe help get us back on the path of the right types of development in the right locations?
Well, if you ask a lot of people, like where I live, I think it's the right type of development.
And I'm sure that everybody, for a lot of folks that are looking to move here, they're looking for a certain type of community, a certain type of housing stock, and that is the case. But is it something that may exacerbate existing conditions or current problems with regard to roadway capacity or other types of infrastructure? So if you keep approving the same types of developments over and over and over, without taking in consideration that there may not be infrastructure improvements along the way, then it's just going to continue to be a problem. So if you approve different types of developments and different types of communities that maybe don't exacerbate the problems, you can help stem that from happening until that infrastructure investment does occur.
As an example.
Let me just finish it with years ago. I can remember, not too many years ago, I take real estate classes, you know, for continuing ed, and they had a guy come in who was one of these
traveling guy, he's an expert or something. And he talked about different policy institutes, I think out of California, and all the studies about what do people want, like we're talking about, okay? And it was 70% wanted a single-family home on an average-size lot. And that 70% was in all age categories. When it got down to manufactured housing, a very small percentage. When it got down to multifamily, another small percentage. Everything was small, fitting that other 30%. But 70% of the people out there that want to live somewhere, they don't want, or they want a single-family home. And that's what we're dealing with, a marketplace. I don't think it's ever changed.
I think it has, actually. There's a lot of empty nesters, recent college graduates that are looking to live in not necessarily a house with a yard, but maybe in a downtown area that's accessible by walking, bicycling.
I agree. Cities, people move back into the cities and revitalize them due to things. But we're not dealing in city.
Dealing with city, but if we're looking to stem the flow of young graduates leaving the county after they finish their education, if we're looking to change the demographic to be more diverse than just retirees, then you will need to consider different types of housing options.
Well, single-family home with the yard. I think we have all those options, but okay, I understand. But if you can find a plan that really actually solved the thing, let me point to it.
I think the good thing about Sussex is that you have so many different opportunities in terms of recreation, in terms of amenities, all these kinds of things for people that want to be here.
They do.
And you're attracting a certain type of resident at this point. And if you want to attract more than that certain type, you would need to consider how the county approval process for new homes and new communities would occur.
There's a large portion of this county does not want to attract any more people because we feel there are already a lot of people. When you add in the 5 million visitors plus the growing the 225,000 now, people, I don't know if it's our job to be attracting more people. So I think the average.
I wasn't saying more, but I'm saying different.
Well, that's whether they're different or more. I mean, it's still more numbers. I know they're coming. They're coming because of low taxes and quality of life, just exactly what you said, and I agree with that. But I don't know if we should be doing something to accelerate that. I don't think that's in my best interest as a resident of this county
at all,
because of the infrastructure. There's no way to ever catch up. So anyway,
Mr. President,
Mr. Wilson.
Sorry to
John. Yesterday we had a hearing so we could so Mr. Steve could build a store right in his own in that little development, cut back to mileage. But we had people lined up almost back.
Yeah, Mr. Wilson, it probably is a valid and great point, but if council hasn't acted on it.
Deferred on that.
Yeah, let's not talk about it just so we don't cause any problems with the record.
Close the record.
I think when it filled right in here, they said let's build something closer. I think this filled right in, but how are you going to – I'm not using anybody's name.
Yeah.
I'll use an example here. How are these people going to get this thing built if they're going to always be against trying to get – get them built closer to get where they don't have to travel as much?
That's a good question. I think, I'll use a different example. We have communities that were developed that don't connect to any other communities. And what it does is it forces everyone to enter and exit out of the same, driveway to get onto a main arterial. If you're going to have a development occur right next door and you want to connect to that original community, a lot of the folks in that community put their hands up and say, I don't want all that cut through traffic. I don't want them coming through my neighborhood because I've been closed off from the world for so long. But the thing is, it also provides the folks in that original community an opportunity to get out in a different way because of the new development. So it's just a matter of perspective. You can look at that as you're making these approvals and say, no, we have a responsibility to make sure that people have access, make sure that there is mobility options and circulation that does occur, that doesn't exacerbate current problems along an arterial. The same approach can be applied when you're looking to site stores, when you're looking to site homes, when you're looking to site industry, when you're looking to site anything else.
Most famous words a person's got is not in my backyard.
Yes.
So to Sam's point, let me ask you this question, because here we don't normally, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but we don't get involved in that on a change of zone, right? We're focused on the zoning of that parcel. When it comes to, and I agree with what you just said, 100%. But is that what we do, or is that what Planning and Zoning Commission at the site plan review, is that what they get involved
in? Yeah, that's more at the site plan review, whether it's a subdivision or a conditional use. Maybe a little bit on the conditional use side, because you could impose a condition that requires interconnectivity. I would just add, we're kind of getting into future land use again and off of housing, and we've got four minutes left, so if we could, I don't know that we're going to stop in 4 minutes, but we could keep going with the goals and objectives.
So go ahead.
All right, so we've been going through a lot of the goals and objectives for this chapter, and I guess to get back to some of the comments that we heard a little bit earlier today, there are opportunities to either strengthen or maybe reassess whether or not what we're putting in the plan is appropriate or consistent with what our goals are for long-term growth. And it does tie into our future land use. And what I would hope that we maybe want to consider is how we identify, you know, what housing opportunities, how we describe them in the plan, what that looks like. And the other part would be what we mean by affordable and what that looks like. And I know that some folks here had some comment about what the free market will bear in some of our one-on-one conversations and the type of housing that's already been built. But I'm looking maybe for a little bit of insight as to whether or not you'd be open to including that kind of strengthened language where appropriate.
Could you give me an example of a mandatory type of approach to this problem?
Were you talking about affordable then, sir?
Well, either, any of them, but I mean, again, my reading of a lot of things, that these mandatory programs have had quicker results, because we've had programs and nothing's happening. So other than that, if we had mandatory programs, we would have had X amount of development out there that would have been providing X amount of housing for this problem. And we've tried it one way, and we've tweaked it a couple times. But anyway, is there any examples out there of hybrids of the? Because we're not familiar with it. But if you could, you don't have to do it right now. But I'm just saying, maybe in.
I would think it would what the zoning allows by right, as being probably the best way to approach encouraging the type of development you want without it having be a mandatory. Ordinance, for example. So if you're going to put a new housing development and you're going to say 30% has to be at a certain price point of a certain type, then yes, that's probably what would be built because that's what developers been told. But if you adjust the zoning to allow for different types of housing and different orientations on that parcel, you can encourage different types of housing without that being a mandate.
Okay. Interesting.
Which gets back down to density.
It can affect density, yes.
Right.
Which is what you like, yes.
No, it's. I look at the options.
Well,
and the
needs. I would say that at the commission level, that was one of the things, and they left it pretty broad, actually, with 8.2.1, increase affordable and fair housing opportunities, so that would give council the opportunity to decide what works.
Right.
To that point, one of the things that the commission looked at was eliminating or changing the process so that multifamily is permitted in every district. You don't have to go to the conditional use to get the conditional use to get it. Not that that would change the density, but it would make it by right. So you could get your multifamily dwellings by right, depending on where they were, without having the additional hearing and the potential objections to that. So
we lock in a density, but we don't lock in a style of housing. So as long as you stick in this density category, you can do any type of housing you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get more open space this way, or you get more of this, or
right.
whatever.
And it may be more affordable to construct. I don't know. There may be, economies of scale issue with that, but still.
Mr. Cole, just to your question about mandatory, which I will happily move forward with mandatory.
You would? Oh my God! I knew you were a secret agent in our midst. I knew that would happen.
But Newcastle County actually is just in the last couple years has a hybrid mandatory. Workforce housing,
mm-hmm.
where I believe it's when they go towards a particular change of zone, that's when they're enrolled
kicks
in
the
mandatory. Yes,
and could, if you get a copy of that to us, maybe that'd be interesting.
Yes.
Interesting, because I don't see this body historically going to mandatory.
Right.
As Sam alluded to, I don't see this group going ever towards rent control.
Right.
But I could see us maybe do a hybrid in certain zones.
A hybrid opportunity, and there's also the opportunity where in some jurisdictions that do it, if a developer for various price point purposes can't just can't do it, can't provide that affordable housing, they can pay out into to contribute to a housing trust fund.
All that money.
But that can help fund other affordable housing for, you know, Habitat or whatever. So there are different components that we could, you know, include in that.
Does that Newark program work?
The Newcastle County, yes, and they have over $1 million in their trust fund just from the last couple of years.
Where people who didn't want to do it paid in.
Right, where I believe it's part of if you're a participant, you also have to pay, but it is, I believe it's when you go for a change of zone that it kicks into to action, so I can certainly send that, because that's the closest one that I'm aware of that's even near our type of, you know, population style, because the other best practices are Fairfax County, Virginia, and Montgomery County, which are so urban and densely populated mm-hmm. already. But Newcastle County's, you know, the most like us, I guess, even mm-hmm. though that's highly populated.
I'd like to take off where Mr. Burton left off. I'd like to start where Mr. Burton left off.
Okay.
The reason is, why is so many people so anxious to come to Sussex County from Newcastle if they're doing so much better than we are?
Because they want to retire here.
We have a beach and they don't.
Well, then that must be a falsehood there, isn't it?
Well,
this is a
workforce housing that they have. So that's for the working individuals, the young professionals that are seeking to find affordable housing.
Evidently we got a better place than Newcastle's got.
Of course we do.
I would just point out too, we're kind of getting bogged down again into the ordinance, the details of it, the plan. I mean, yeah, that's a good question, but.
It's a good question.
Make one comment. You asked if we would be open to
yes.
to that, and although I think George's comment of the 70% of single family homes, or you know, I don't know if that's accurate data. That
take
you,
my word for it.
You may that may have been school a long time
there
ago.
There you go.
But because I do think that to encourage people to come back. Or to remain here. I don't know that my daughter is interested in buying a house and living in it and cutting the grass and all. I mean, she's not interested in that. She is interested in something else. And so I think we ought to have that. We can't become a retirement community of single family homes. And that's what is attracted to that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would be open to looking at other housing stock to hope to get other stock on the shelves being other people.
But what's out there that we don't have? The mini house is the only thing I can think of we don't do here in Sussex County. The developers have accommodated all these people who don't want to cut grass. They'll build a single family home, and the condo will take care of it. And then there's the people.
But it's still a single family.
But then there's the multifamily. We got multifamily. We got duplex. We got it all. So your daughter has every opportunity right now to find those places. Anybody does come into this county. The developers are building them, right? Aren't they?
Well, that's.
Tell me they are.
Not multifamily.
No.
Not multifamily.
No, we're not.
You're not building any multifamily?
Because you just keep saying no.
He's right. He's got you.
No, I didn't.
I think he's right. Okay. And I'm going to second that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think there's
right.
There's 2 points. Real quick, Mike, because I know we're out of time.
I'll be right, but never wrong.
To IG's point,
Sam,
again, is that narrowing the affordability gap, providing by additional housing options,
yes.
Right? For those younger families, and we want to try to keep our kids here, which... Totally, but beyond that is the retirees. I have to tell you, that really, really concerns me. Having two parents that I helped before their passing, there was real issues that I experienced and learned from other families about as people come here to live their dream, their golden years, if you would. At some point in time, they need care, and they don't want to mow the grass, and they don't want to do all these things. They need public transportation, and we're not paying attention to that like we should, I don't think. And here's the opportunity to do what you just said. So I think it's both for our aging population as well as our younger ones. We have to look beyond the single family detached houses. We have to.
It's there. We got it.
We have
it.
To. No, we don't. You just heard it.
No,
it's not my words. It's him.
No, we got it.
No, we don't. Not on your road, maybe. On your waterfront estate,
okay.
Maybe.
So I think that wraps up the housing element. Were there any other questions?
Any questions from council?
I look forward to getting in more into it.
Mr. Burton.
Mr. Shell mentioned that the rental formula is different than the owner formula. Is there a reason for that?
It's just targeting a lower income, right? Because the demand for rental housing seems to be higher for lower income individuals. The public housing wait list for the state is 18 to 24, even more months, I think. So it's just there's a strong demand for it.
Always has been,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed. My whole lifetime it's
been
that way.
We need more multifamily rentals, just as Mr. Shell said. I think he has a demand even at market rate, but for the affordable.
60 years ago, your whole lifetime. Wasn't that way 60 years ago?
Okay. Thank you.
Reality.
Anything else? You've heard the presentation from Mr. Mullen on the plan that the commission recommended to you all. Is there any direction you have back to them at this point as far as anything you want to revisit or any questions about whether it's in there now?
I mean, these are great goals and great objectives. When we get into these ordinances, but these are great goals. Like I said, I would think every plan in America has goals similar to that, correct?
And that I will say that the commission took that into consideration. They took a lot of what Ms. Wall's group talked about into consideration. You'll see those in the strategies because there's a lot of things in here that touch upon what I think everybody said. Like, I think we recognize we need to improve the county's SCRP and MPHU programs. That's in there. Looking at ways to increase affordable housing options, that's in there. There's some broad, there's some specific. The accessory dwelling unit ordinance and the garage studio ordinance that talks about we need to go back and revisit that. So there's some specifics that talk about things that we've heard today. There's also some broad things that give you an umbrella to talk about the things that we've heard today. So,
well, I think we've heard a lot of good information, really. Starting with Mr. Shell's, a lot of good comments. We appreciate that. I think it's maybe it would be a good idea. We've heard a lot in a short period of time. A good idea maybe to, if we haven't got any questions now, maybe our next meeting we can start off with any comments, questions about what we're talking about today.
Sure. We'd be happy to maybe.
Give people time to think, read your notes, whatever, go through that, and then come back the first, I guess we meet again.
It's the 3rd.
January 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
At that meeting to start off with after public comment, to start off with review of.
Yeah, I think that ought to be part
what we get
of
done today.
Yep. Absolutely.
And see if that way everybody's got time to think about it and study on it and get some thoughts together, that kind of stuff.
But yeah.
Okay. And a good way just to overlook take a look at the strategies. It's like, do we want to include some additional? Do we want to strengthen any of them? Are there others that we want to tweak? Because I think Ms. Wall said there's one she would like to see tweaked. So if you definitely look into those strategies, we can then go through those and
yep.
make sure
we can
call out
specific
those.
Ones that would be, helped by
sure.
those changes.
So, I was going to say, as we get done today, I would recommend to all of us up here that if there are things that you see in any of these we're going to talk about, to make some notes and maybe send those to Janelle and Todd or whoever to get that back to the consultant.
Yep.
So you can do some legwork if you need to in the meantime before next meeting.
But our idea is to have on all our agendas to have time
review.
For us to
sure.
say, hey, what about this? Because
yeah.
I got a lot of information here today that I didn't know before, so you might have some questions or comments
okay.
for next time we meet.
Sure.
And again, there's no reason just so to help facilitate that conversation for you to get questions to Janelle or Todd or whoever so that we can get those to John in the meantime so that he knows the questions and he'll have answers on the 3rd or whenever it is.
January 3rd.
Yeah, one other question, Mike, would be just on the examples of mandatory examples of being. Examples of being of mandatory type programs or hybrids and all that stuff, which I think Randy said she goes. Also, I think also that works are these community development programs. They do one, they're doing one like in West Rehoboth where the community's gotten together and is raising funds to help purchase stuff for these people and stuff. I think those work. It seems they've done on a small scale. I think we do them larger. So maybe funding programs that create this safety blanket. We also have, I think, on our community development where we give money. What's the program we give money to help rehab houses?
Emergency.
Your big one.
Yeah.
Okay.
We talked
about
that.
We fund that to what tune?
I think this year was $150,000.
$150,000. Now, you know, one remodeling job down the beach is $150,000. And we do how many homes with $150,000?
Usually we do about 70 to 80.
70, 80. And what's the waiting list?
We really don't have an emergency waiting list.
But we have a...
The regular waiting list, the county wants about 800,000.
800 some thousand, which has been about 800 to 1,000 for as long as, again, I've been here. So we've made a little dent. Again, I think it's going to take funding program, this county, putting more money into those kind of programs. Then we have the low interest loan program, right? Which, does that still work where we used to, we don't do that anymore?
The DSHA. DSHA got rid of it several years ago.
Well, we could do it, right? We could do it at the county level, right? Because a federal or a state program goes away, we need, if there's a problem there, that helped people. So those are the things that really, I think, you know, hit the ground running, because we could loan money to these people at 2% or 1%, correct? So I'd like to see some of those. I don't want to hear that the solution to our problem is more density, to my density boy here.
It's a tool.
It's no tool. It's nobody wants more density in a county that's already bursting in the highways, the seams, and everything else.
You've heard other opinions today.
I understand.
From here.
You want to be careful, Mr. Whale.
Don't listen to
George,
you're
put
street.
Words in your mouth.
Anything else? Hearing none, we will go recess. We got